Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, from the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars. I'm set up here. Jessica, do not play with my microphone. Yeah, the kids are, finishing up their summer vacation up here in New York. Sometimes they don't know what to do. Everyone knows. If you have kids, there is no explanation needed. Anyway, time got away with us. From us, I should say. How's everybody doing out there today? Yeah, we have little changes going on here in the background, if you're on the video stream. Okay, now, last night, on the Safety FM part, the radio part of this, we had internet connectivity issues. So you did not get a very good stream, or when I listen to it, I have it going through the board here. So I got the whole program. I started talking about some things that people could talk about, controversial. Maybe this is like the old coast-to-coast AM, where the minute that you start talking about something controversial, there you have technical issues. Yeah, that used to happen all the time. So what we are going to do, because we had those technical issues, we're going to review some of the things that we talked about last night. Specifically on the, the OSHA outreach updates. We talk about construction. However, there's a lot of stuff going on out there outside of construction here with OSHA outreach training. They updated everything. And this is not a strange thing. We'll leave it at that. This is not a strange occurrence that things get... hold on, let me do this. It's not a strange occurrence that they update this stuff. So every couple of years, they update things because of what's going on in the industry, what they're seeing going on. And the big thing was COVID, right? So they changed a lot of their policies on how, because of COVID, for example, there was only, I believe, 9 different companies that were allowed to do online OSHA training as far as the OSHA outreach training. And they had set up platforms, and this is all in the late 1990s, early 2000s, when this stuff first started to really hit home. And it seems like the big holdup on a lot of it was know-how, online platforms. No, YouTube really wasn't there yet. And there's different ways of doing training, the verified training. And what they ended up doing was more companies wanted to get involved in it. I was looking to getting involved in online OSHA training with a learning management system. And OSHA said, no, we're only doing these 9 companies, and now it's 8, I believe, because one went out of business. I don't know how they didn't license their thing. And so now there's only, I think, 8 companies, unless they're started approving things again recently. And they have all different types of safeguards and everything else thrown in there. For example, you have to be visible to the camera. OSHA also allows... stuff via Zoom or Teams or other similar network, but you have to have someone there looking at that screen, and they change things with that. And you used to be updating stuff for, you would have to update things. Apply for online training for like 60 days prior. And now it's not that long. And then it was a long questionnaire and everything. Just a lot of stuff going on. So we're going to cut to commercial break real quick. And then we're going to get started with what everybody missed last night on the radio portion. Because this is actually very important information out there. So we're going to cut to commercial break. It is Thursday. We haven't been gone on Thursday because of all of this stuff out there. So with baseball and kids' activities, again, you know how it is. So here we go.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message. Context drives behavior. Context drives behavior.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Pozel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yes, so we're all about here is the harsh reality. All right, so I'm going to do a share screen here with... Ooh, where do we want to go with this? Hold on. Should have had this up and running. I know. Okay. All right, what I have here is... And everything is going good on the video until I go to do it. Hold on. We have a handout here, key changes on for OSHA training program requirements. I am doing a share screen here. Current application and, hold on. Preview. Okay, there we go. All right. We're learning. This new software has a huge learning curve, as Jay Allen says. So we're getting there, you know? All right. So this is right from OSHA. Let me move the logo out of the way. Outreach training program changes for... Right, OSHA outreach training program changes as of July 2024, and everything here takes effect on October 1st. So, for OSHA outreach trainers, OSHA periodically updates the requirements that authorized outreach trainers must follow in conducting and reporting OSHA outreach training program. Pardon me, classes. This document highlights key changes in the July 2024 OSHA Outreach Program requirements and industry procedures, and everything is up until, goes into effect on October 1st, because they gave you basically 60 days to change what you're doing. A lot of the requirement here, a lot of the stuff here is... Now, you plan it out 60 days ahead, right? So on the trainer responsibilities, right? They lowered the requirement that trainers must submit all exemption requests from 60 days to at least 7 calendar days prior to the scheduled class start date. They added the use of email, print media, social media, and websites as inappropriate behavior if a trainer makes discriminatory or defamatory remarks regarding OSHA and outreach center, basically, or any other individual or group of individuals. I think they're getting more specific on that because that was always it. You can't make bad remarks on OSHA during the class. That's how I take it. Now, some of the trainers that I've had, and this, I'm probably going to write a letter here, probably worth a letter of interpretation as, you know, when I became an OSHA trainer, I did not give up my civil rights. So I could see that if I am in the middle of a class and I want to make a remark about OSHA negatively, obviously that's, I would hope, obviously that means that that would obviously be prohibited. However, if I could say, look, they could do a better job doing this, or maybe that Congress should make a better thing here, I don't see where that there's a problem here. It should make a better law, empower them, allocate more money. I don't think that that's necessarily wrong or against this, but I've been told, no, don't say that, by one set of trainers. The other set of trainers says, well, look, you could, you know, you're not allowed to say anything against OSHA at any venue. Well, guess what? I didn't give up my civil rights to do this. So I think there needs to be some type of interpretation letter on that. All timelines are identified as calendar days and vice working days or month. That's what they say, calendar days. Clarifies that trainers have the sole responsibility to maintain all class records. Exception requests or video conferencing are no longer required. However, the primary outreach trainers training center must receive advance notification no later than 7 calendar days to be scheduled. Video conferencing class size is reduced from 40 to 20 students unless a proctor is present for the entire class. Added that classes delivered using an alternative training method, meaning video conference, must be reported on the OTPR and recorded under other type of training in Block 11 as remote. So they're not going through all of this paperwork. We used to have to do this big, long thing out there. I mean, it was a nightmare to write. For me, it was, at least. Clarified student course completion card delivery requirements. Now, where I see the pitfall here is this. If you're using video conferencing or something like that, okay, they're letting you do, you know, do that at, no, as of October 1st. But the issue is this. You had better make darn sure that you record that. Because I see people getting audited for this one. Well, how do we know you did X, Y, and Z? Well, I have a written, a recorded record on it. I can see that that's probably the only way you're going to get around with that. And revisions to specific industry procedures. All industries added trainer update exemptions for overseas service, added in eligible training topics. We're going to go into that. Added that outreach trainers must retain program class records for 5 years from the class end date. This requirement is the sole responsibility of an outreach trainer, regardless of what records may be maintained by an employer. So, an outreach trainer, an outreach trainer is responsible for their own records. OSHA reserves the right to request copies of class records for verification purposes at any time. They added the statement of compliance and revised the document to read a test, vice sir. I think this is a misprint. Let's go and look this up. What do they mean? Define vice. A negative habit, a moral failing, a behavior, sinful, okay? Vice is often referred to actions or inclinations that are harmful to oneself or others. I don't know what word that they're looking for there. There is a misprint in this document, and it is from OSHA, which they normally don't do that. I do it all the time. So that's their document. You can go and look it up. We're going to go into the construction procedures part here. And where is that? Okay, I had to go and I closed it out, I think. Yeah, hold on. Outreach procedures. Nothing could ever go smooth here. Allow. Okay, so I am on the webpage, construction industry procedures and program requirements. All right. So we're going to take both of these on here. Okay, we are getting there. We are getting there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Hold on. So these are the OSHA Outreach Training Program requirements. Here, let's see, make sure that we're on the same page, so to speak. Is everybody seeing this? All right, this is why I'm not doing the video. All right, training program requirements here. This should be up on your screen right there if you're following along on the video. So this is as of October 1st. Of this year. Here are the trainer requirements. Requirements for trainers authorized through the Occupational Safety OSHA Outreach Training Program are contained in the following documents and here. The purpose of the OSHA Outreach Training Program is to teach workers about their rights, employer responsibilities, and how to file a complaint, as well as how to recognize, abate, and prevent job-related hazards. OSHA authorizes safety and health professionals who complete an OSHA Outreach Training Program trainer course to conduct occupational safety health classes for workers. OSHA has promoted workplace and safety and health by authorizing trainers since 1971. I didn't know it went back that far. The outreach training program is voluntary. Outreach training does not meet training requirements contained in any OSHA standard. That's critical for what we're talking about here. Some states and local jurisdictions have enacted legislation mandating OSHA outreach training program training, and some employers and unions require workers to have this training to work on job sites or to fulfill their own safety training goals. However, the federal government does not mandate OSHA outreach training program participation, and it refers you to a document. So how do you become an authorized outreach trainer? To become an outreach trainer, an individual must meet the prerequisite requirements and complete the applicable industry trainer course through an authorized training organization, ATO. The specific industry program procedures for detailed information, see the specific industry, right? So, update requirement. To remain current on relevant OSHA matters and to ensure quality training, Outreach trainers are required to complete a trainer update course every 4 years. I'm doing mine for general industry next month at Texas A&M. No, I am not traveling. At all. No, that was my wife was like, "You're not traveling, are you?" No, I'm not traveling. It's all done via Zoom there. So let me make sure I'm still on the air here. All right. Trainer, and then they have trainer update exemption for overseas military service, right? Course offerings, outreach trainer, and I skipped over one. If a trainer's authorization has expired, trainer will be unable to conduct outreach training and receive student course completion cards. Extension City trainer's expiration date will not be granted, except in Section 3C, and that's only if you're in the military. And they have certain things in there where they're, no, they have that. But that tends to change very often, so you got to double check. Course offerings. Outreach trainer and trainer update courses are offered through OSHA Training Institute Education Centers. A searchable course, okay, great. So, and it goes through the requirements of the ATO. And blah, 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 says that OSHA outreach trainer responsibilities is the responsibility of each outreach trainer to comply with the guidance, the guidelines. Have to use your real name, your legal name. So I couldn't put like Safety Warrior on the cards. That's a no-no. And talks about international students. And outreach trainers are expected to promote program goals and training and represent OSHA and their authorized training organization, ATO, in a credible manner. And if you don't do it, you get into trouble. So just summarize a whole bunch of stuff. You have to have an exemption request. Okay. OT does not routinely grant exceptions to policy for outreach classes. Exception requests are evaluated individually. Previously granted policy exemptions do not guarantee or imply approval for future requests. Exemption requests must include a detailed narrative describing the need for the exemption, why the inherent flexibility of the program is insufficient to deliver quality training. All exception requests must be submitted in writing by the primary outreach trainer. ATOs will receive and review all exception requests and may approve under certain limited conditions. All exception requests must meet the following requirement, the following conditions. All exemption requests must be submitted in writing to the trainer's ATO at least 7 calendar days prior to the scheduled class date for review and processing, and a trainer is permitted only one exemption in effect per class. An exception will only be granted in unusual extenuating circumstances. OSHA does not consider cost savings, trainer availability, or program or workplace time limits or missing work to be extenuating circumstances. Our code of conduct. Now, this is where people get into trouble. They put this in here because someone got into trouble 15 years ago now, I think it was. So in the Daily News out of New York, they did a investigation, and the headline was Safety for Sale, where a person was out there and they had it in a bar. And a very famous club in New York, a social club. And there was a bar. They had like a banquet hall upstairs and a bar downstairs. And everybody went up there into the bar. This was back in the days when you were allowed to do training in one day. We'll talk about that later on. And they went and everybody allegedly signed in and then went down to the bar for the rest of the class. So no serving of alcohol. So this is what happens here. There are certain social clubs out there, I will mention, but they're out there that may have alcohol, may have a bar. If you're getting audited by OSHA, they may frown on that, all right? Or you have to have controls in place saying that, hey, nobody was allowed in the bar. So or drinking alcohol. All right. Suggesting how to circumvent OSHA regulation. Yeah, that's probably a real bad idea. Making discriminatory or defamatory remarks towards regarding OSHA, an ATO, or an individual group or individuals. This includes email, print media, social media, and websites. Telling jokes that reasonably could be considered offensive. You don't tell jokes at all. Insulting, humiliating, or demeaning. Believe me, that's my hardest part. I don't tell jokes during these classes. Improper class setting. That means that you cannot have training, for example, in bars, locations with outside distractions, or in-person training at private residences. That's an improper class setting. So, for example, let's say that you're a provider, like I am, and you decide, like my old house was perfect for, was a Mary Kay direct distributor, I believe, or an Avon, and they had the whole house set up as a training center for Mary Kay or Avon, I forget which one it was, and it was wonderfully set up. And then I went out and I asked for permission to go there. And said, no way, man, it's in your house. I said, but I have an actual training center set up in the house. You can do training there, but not outreach training. So for outreach training, I had to go out and get a venue, right? A felony conviction. Outreach trainers convicted of a felony may be subject to corrective action, including suspension or revocation. Prior felony conviction does not automatically preclude a prospective trainer from attending a trainer course or seeking authorized trainer status. It means that it's got to be under review. Failure to handle the payment and refund of a course tuition and fees in a professional manner. So let's say you have to cancel a course, you have to refund everything within 5 days, and things of that, right? And there are certain exceptions that, or if the trainer reschedules the canceled class, failing to reimburse full course and tuition fees to each student that does not affirmatively agree within 10 business days of class cancellation to attend, right? Double scheduling. Outreach trainers may not schedule multiple classes projected to occur at the same date or time. So an outreach trainer, one of those things, they cannot do 7.5 hours or more of training a day. So, for example, you cannot do like 2 classes in 1 day. So it's, pardon me, 7.5 hours. And then you take a half an hour off, then do another 7.5 hours. You got 2 things. And after the Gulf oil spill, they stopped allowing that. Because during the Gulf oil spill, all different kinds of stuff were going out with this training was going on. With me, I videotaped every session. So what happened was, I was one of the few authorized training providers for the 40-hour HAZWOPER for that whole project. Because I videotaped everything, and they asked me questions, and I said, hey, I got everything videotaped. Okay, OSHA defines a student as a person attending a class. So other people like a trainer or assistant or a guest are not considered students. So, for example, you have to have between 3 and 20 people per class. I'm sorry, 3 and 40 for in-person and 3 and 20 for online. Attendance. Receive a student course completion card. The student must attend the entire class and complete all class requirements, including all requisite topics and a minimum number of contact hours. Student contact hours. Student contact hours refer to the time spent covering course content. Daily student contact hours do not include breaks for meals or other breaks or time spent on administrative matters such as taking attendance or administering optional tests. Daily student count. Training is limited to 7.5 student contact hours conducted per calendar day. Therefore, a 10-hour class must take a minimum of 2 calendar days. The 30-hour class must take a minimum of 4 calendar days. The entire duration of an individual training session can be no more than 10 consecutive hours, including 7.5 student contact hours and administrative time, such as lunch slash meal and other breaks. Taking attendance, blah, 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 blah. No more than 10 hours of training, including student contact hours and breaks and administrative matters, may be conducted in a 16-hour period. An 8-hour break minimum is required if 7.5 or more hours of training, including all the everything we just mentioned, are conducted in a 16-hour period. This break may not be longer to ensure compliance, blah, 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 blah. And they have breaks and meal periods. At a minimum, 10-minute break period must be provided after every 2 consecutive student contact hours of instruction. A meal period of at least 30 minutes must be provided for each training session, which lasts more than 6 hours. Outreach trainers may break the class into segments to deliver training over multiple days, weeks, or months, provided the training is completed within 180 calendar days of the class start date. And, right, OSHA expects program training to meet adult learning needs and include interactive activities. Therefore, training must include workshops, case studies, exercises, and demonstrations that involve student participation or interaction. This is where the problem happens with online training, is specifically that. And videos can now comprise more than 25% of the instructional time spent on program training. So you have to verify student identification. That is important because many students, especially having a larger class, they sign in for each other. Or I've had students attend training for other people, right? So they say, well, my name is John Smith, right? And all of a sudden it's, no, they're doing it for Steve Jones, right? Now, this is why I require a government-issued ID every class. I don't retain a copy of it, but I require a copy of it because I want the spelling to be correct. I want the name to be correct and everything. If they don't have that, they cannot attend the class. Real simple, because we've had people pull fast ones. On the outreach course, not so much, not recently. Not at least in the last 5 years. For the 40-hour class, that happens all the time, right? Providing 10-hour students additional training to receive a 30-hour card. So as long as it's done within 180 days, you could do it, but you have to get the old 10-hour card. And it all has to be the same trainer the same primary trainer is my understanding of it. And again, you have to go... And you have to, it has to be the same outreach trainer. Standalone training. Oh, outreach training courses are considered standalone courses. May not be conducted as part of or in conjunction with OSHA outreach training, other OSHA outreach training. So, for example, because the first hour is always the same, or at least 1 hour is always the same, that's the intro to OSHA. You cannot say, well, now when you go for another course, you can do minus 1 hour. Cannot be done. Makeup training, and again, makeup training is allowed under certain circumstances. And ineligible training classes. CPR and first aid instruction or training cannot be counted towards fulfillment of OSHA outreach training program requirements. There is a question on that because OSHA regulations do have outreach training. I have first aid CPR availability. So I don't know. That's probably worth a letter. I never do it that way, but it's probably worth a letter. Topics. Must be occupational safety and health topics dealing with hazard recognition and prevention. So it's not to be a... standards course. And as far as it has to be done within the jurisdiction of OSHA, right? And if you're ever wondered what the United States territories are, there are Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, American Samoa, Guam, Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands, Wake Island, other continental shelf islands, defining the outer continental shelf, and Johnston Island. Now, we all know that No, Puerto Rico is nice weather. Virgin Islands, American Samoa, Guam, Northern Mariana Islands, Wake. I wonder if you could, like, hey, we're going on a trip somewhere. And there were companies that did this during training in Vegas every month. And their whole thing was come to Vegas, come for safety training, and then you could go out and party all night. I don't know how that works, though. The next day, everybody hungover. Okay. Now, training language has to be the language that the students understand. Now, if you're going to have an interpreter, it's going to take you twice as long, basically, if you look at this. And they have guidelines here for this. And types of OSHA authorized training, primary training, what the requirements are, other people and guest trainers. So if you're going to have a guest trainer, you got to be there. So outreach training, minimum class size, 3 students. Maximum class size, 40 students, except for video conferencing, as they previously discussed. And the records retention. Make sure you go through that records retention. And student contact info. Also. Okay. And they have a whole list of record keeping here. I won't go through it. Advertising. This is where people get into trouble. Advertising include, you have to say all OSHA authorized. I have seen trainers say all OSHA certified. OSHA doesn't certify trainers. It's OSHA authorized with that. The other thing is terms OSHA and Department of Labor may be used in advertising, but not in a manner that implies or expresses that OSHA authorized outreach trainer is an employee of OSHA or that the outreach class is being conducted by or has been approved of by the Department of Labor. So, for example, I get, when I'm submitting proposals, they say, well, it says you're authorized. It doesn't say you're certified. Yeah, that's right. Because it's against the law for me to say certified. Against the guidelines. Oh, really? Well, other people do. I said, well, other people could do what they do. I don't break the law. You know? I might not agree with the law, but I don't break the law. Not usually, you know, not intentionally. I don't do that. Now, going on here, advertising cannot use the logos of OSHA. One of our listeners called me up and said, yeah, I'm having a problem where my employer is using OSHA logos on their internal training certificates. I said, that's not good. Right, that's against the law. Even though it's public domain, they don't, by law, they're not allowed to do it. Certified or licensed. We just talked about that. You're not allowed to have certified or licensed. Approved, OSHA approved, doesn't in there. OSHA doesn't approve things. So if you are an OSHA trainer, you cannot conduct trainer courses. That has to be done by the authorized training organization. The use of train-the-trainer outreach trainers must not be combined the use. Outreach trainers must not combine the use of OSHA and train-the-trainer in advertising. So what's my point on here? What's my beef? If they're breaking the law then what else are they breaking the law on? It's a leading indicator. Outreach trainers may not conduct asynchronous remote classes, meaning you have you have a video ahead of time, right? Asynchronous, not live instructor-led remote classes. Only OSHA-authorized online outreach training providers may can do that. Video conferencing, OSHA's preferred delivery method is through standard in-person classroom instruction. Training conducted through a remote video conferencing platform is permitted. So another question I'm going to have, let's say that we have a guest lecturer that is remote. So I have a video conference of a guest lecturer. and we throw the person up there on Zoom, and they go through everything on Zoom or what online platform. Is that allowed? Right? I don't know. That's a good question there. Someone send me the answer. And they have the things on there, right? And going on with this, right? Again, administrative stuff. We're going to take a break here because I need to get a refill on my drink here. These long things. Unbelievable.
In an unpredictable world.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Posel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant. That's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Pozel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yes, that's us, facing that harsh reality. Okay, now, we're going to go over the construction industry procedures briefly here, and we may go overtime if you're on Safety FM, and if we go overtime, you just got to listen to the podcast on here or videocast. This is not live videocast. We will be doing that after the program here. Right, OSHA require, and I'm going to say this much. If you are a training provider, make sure that you save this. Make sure you save this. Make sure you present this. Because this is, now, you may want to use 845-269-5772 or Jim at safetywords.com. Safetywords.com is our website. We get a lot of questions out there, and part of the reason why I'm doing this program like this tonight is that if you're a client of mine, you're getting a link to this, to go over this, with, you know, what exactly is this, so you can present it with to your organization here with this. So here we have construction. This is from Letter of Interpretation on what exactly construction is. All right, do the following facts bear on whether work will be considered maintenance or construction? So is that general industry or construction? And they reference other things, but here is the regulation. OSHA's regulations define construction work as construction. You gotta love it. If my Catholic brothers who taught me English in high school, they could see that. Never use the word that you're defining in the definition. So construction, alteration, and or repair, including painting and decorating. So for example, and I went through this with a client yesterday. They do event and meeting planning, and they were, and I said, well, do you do decorating? They said, no, we don't. I said, no decorating at all? They said, well, sometimes you put up a thing. I said, well, if you are putting up, let's say, I said, I don't know what your policy is, you got to be careful, but some work areas put up a Christmas tree, or they call it a holiday tree now, being politically correct. Well, that's decorating. Now it's construction work. Now you have to comply with construction regulations. Oh, if you're painting, now you're a construction worker, according to OSHA and the regulations. And, right, with that. And, you know, I got into it one time. You could go and look it up in the podcast, one of these, where a guy was talking about, and this was the trainer, where people were going inside an above-ground storage tank to paint. Therefore, you have to comply with 1910-146. And I said, no, I very nicely told them during one of the breaks, hey, it's 1926-1200 because painting is considered construction work. So you got to go to construction. And I explained, no, you're wrong. And then they came out with a gaslighting thing. So I wanted to say, you know, if you are involved in any of these activities like this, guess what? You may need the construction training outreach. It's a little bit different than general industry and maritime and disaster. So, again, what is it? It goes through this. We already went through this in the first half hour here. And you're required to take courses. One of them is a standards course for the construction industry. And the second one is the is considered a train-the-trainer type thing. So you have to complete OSHA 500 and then OSHA 510 before that. Back in the day, they did not require the standards class. And people got the training credential without knowing anything about what they were teaching, right? With that. All right. And it goes in, you know, on there. Right. So here we have the 10-hour construction industry course, designated training topics. This training program is intended to provide construction industry trainer, let me get to share a screen, on how to file a complaint as well as how to, right, blah, blah, blah. So here we go. Instructional time must be a minimum of 10 hours. The minimum topic requirements are as follows. Required 6 hours. Intro to OSHA is 1 hour. Right? I can do 2 hours on there, make it interesting. That's kind of hard to do in 1 hour if you do it right, I'll be honest with you. And that you're learning how to file an OSHA thing, an OSHA a complaint, work employer rights and workers' rights, employer responsibilities, how to file a complaint, helpful resources, examples of weekly fatality and catastrophe report. So this is, as an instructor, you have to do constant updates to this section. It's not one of those things that you can wing. It's constant updates for that. OSHA focus four hazards. Most construction fatalities are caused by fall hazards, therefore, minimum 1.5 hours of that. What's the other focus for? Electrocution, struck by, caught in or between. Now, that right there is 4 hours right there. So you have 1 hour intro. And then you have falls, 1.5 hours. That makes 2.5 hours. Electrocution, 30 minutes. Struck by, 30 minutes. Caught in between, that's that's 4 hours with that. And then health hazards in construction and PPE, 30 minutes apiece. And therefore, you get to 6 hours. So 1 hour for that, 4 hours for OSHA Focus 4. If my math is right. So usually fall protection, I put down for like 2 hours. And then, you know, you just got to make sure you get the times right. And the thing is, if you're a trainer, all of that has to be worked out ahead of time. because if you are getting audited by OSHA, they have a stopwatch. Or if you're video recording that, there's a stopwatch. Remote training, right? Everything's done by stopwatch with that. And you had better make darn sure you hit those numbers. Elective, 2 hours. Must be, well, with the smartphone now you can have a countdown, right? Elective, 2 hours. Must prevent at least present at least 2 hours of training on the following topics. At least two topics must be presented. The minimum length of any topic is 30 minutes. They give you a whole list of things here. An optional 2 hours. Teach other construction industry hazards or policies and or expand on the required elective topics. Minimum length of any topic is 30 minutes and thus completes 10-hour course. Now you have the 30-hour construction industry designated training topics. Everything's basically, this is what it comes down to. There are additional topics. We'll go through that. You're required 14 hours. Intro to OSHA for 1 hour. Managing safety and health for 2 hours, where you're going to be talking about injury and illness prevention programs, I2P2, job site inspections, accident prevention programs, management commitment, employee involvement, worksite analysis, how to conduct safety meetings, and supervisory communication. Then you have the OSHA Focus 4 hazard with that for 1 hour and 30 minutes. The remaining 3 Focus 4 hazards, OSHA Focus 4 hazards for 6 hours. Again, falls minimum of 1.5 hours. You may go 1.5 hours. I usually go more than that. But you may go but it's got to be a minimum. Because some places, these courses are tailor-made to the individual taking the course. This is the disadvantage of an open enrollment course. We may have a whole bunch of stuff that is irrelevant. And this is why this is not a certification. It's because every one of these courses is different. So, for example, if they're never going to use fall protection, guess what? 1.5 hours maybe is adequate. But if they're like iron workers or carpenters, scaffold builders, guess what? You may want to go into more than that, right? Same thing with everything else. It's the minimum. You can play with it. PPE for 2 hours, health hazards and construction 2 hours, stairways and ladders 1 hour. And then no series and ladders thrown in there. Electives are 2 hours. They give you a whole list of things and then optional 4 hours to expand on the required or elective topics. The minimum, so the elective topics you can expand on are right there, according to this document. Minimum length for any topic is 30 minutes. With an exception, under the elective Foundations for Safety Leadership, which is an OSHA publication, they require a minimum of 2 hours and 30 minutes. And then the same ineligible requirements. So, I don't know. What do you think? This was... you think this is futile? Do you think this was worth it? Because there's a lot of misunderstanding here. And we'll look to, I would go and I would try to have this as a in your bag of tricks. What's supposed to happen? Now, the other thing is this. If you are let me close that out. If you are evaluating a training class or if you attended one, they didn't do this. Guess what? You may have a problem. The problem that we have in this area, Metro New York, is that a lot of people are involved in the Department of Buildings stuff. Where a couple years ago, the former Mayor de Blasio made it, and the New York City Council made it a requirement 40 hours of training for beyond Department of Building sites. And they had no safety background. This is one of those things where the experts... the quote-unquote politicians thought that they were experts. Hey, it's only safety, only need blah, 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 blah. And they came up with a convoluted system that required tens of thousands of people to actually go and get licensed by the Department of Buildings. And there was a phase-in period and everything else. Well, guess what? Most people are living paycheck to paycheck, and we were dealing with stuff during the pandemic. So what do you think happened? companies out there were giving out certificates that they really weren't supposed to do, or these cards, right? So you get all this stuff, and you submit the card, right? The application for the card, then you get the card back. I didn't see anything in here about temporary cards. Back before October 1st, you could issue a temporary card with certain language. I didn't see that here. That's probably a good follow-up question on that. Again, got to always read this. Every time I do a training class, I always read these guidelines to make sure that I got it right, because if you screw it up, you got a problem. But what happened was companies went out there and they just started selling this stuff on the street practically. And it shows. One person got caught, or one company, 20,000 cards were issued fraudulently. That guy hasn't been sentenced yet, as far as I know. So this is basically it with this. With this, why they're so strict and everything. And it shows. Now that people are being renewed and they have more time, I think people are, and they are cracking down on this, you're going to see a lot better educated people. But I had one guy, and I reported it as a fraudulent card. I don't know whatever became of it. He told me that steel toe boots, or safety toe boots, right? They're going to be steel toe no matter what with me. Safety toe boots cause your toes to be cut off if they get struck. I was like, you just went through 30 hours of training to learn that? Yeah. Well, who told you that? The trainer? The trainer told me that. I'm like, you mean your coworkers told you that? Trainer wouldn't say that. I doubt it. And then it turns out, well, I said, where did you get this card? Because according to our records, you were issued this card on such and such a date by such and such a trainer. Was this done on in person? Oh, yeah, it was done in person. Absolutely. I said, well, it's funny. You were working here that day. I got your timesheet. Well, my boss just handed me a 30-hour card. Okay, well then, you know. And that's it. I don't know, very frustrating, as you can tell, with me. So, I don't know. We'll figure things out here. We're going to be, what are we? 8:57, 57 minutes after the hour, if you're everywhere else. How much time do we have left here? All right, we have just enough time. We're going to... Do the outro, and we will see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.